You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Boy, that escalated quickly. With that, welcome in to another new episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben DuBose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. The Rockets are off Thursday. They did practice getting ready for tomorrow night's game, the fifth of the season against the LA Clippers, but it's news off the floor that is making the headlines. The Rockets fell to 1-3 last night with the loss to the Utah Jazz, but that feels like a bit of a distant memory given today's developments. First, the bad. We got injury updates on James Harden, James Ennis, and Nene. The first two with hamstring strains. James Ennis a grade 2, James Harden a grade 1 plus, both missing at least the next two games, then reevaluated before the five-game road trip that starts next Friday. Nene suffered a setback, it appears, in his rehabilitation from a calf strain, so he'll be reevaluated in 2 weeks. So the Rockets, short on bodies, are not getting reinforcements anytime soon. We will discuss that later in today's show, but we're not going to lead with it because we're going to lead with the story that's broken over the past hour, courtesy of Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN, which is that, well, one of those reinforcements that the Rockets theoretically could bring in to replace some of those injured bodies, it's a guy they've been linked to for some time, all-star forward Jimmy Butler from the Minnesota Timberwolves, according to Woj and the report that's on ESPN.com. I strongly encourage you to read it if you have not already. The Houston Rockets are making a renewed bid to acquire Minnesota Timberwolves all-star Jimmy Butler, including four future first-round picks in their most recent offer. The Timberwolves have continued to solicit offers on Butler since the start of the regular season. Houston's push represents a desire to sacrifice some long-term roster flexibility and go all in with a legitimate third star to partner with James Harden and Chris Paul in pursuit of a championship. And then if you go down in the story, Woj notes that the Rockets would be trading for Butler with a strong desire to re-sign him this summer to a long-term contract extension. Butler is 29 years old. He would be an unrestricted free agent by exercising his player option, but the Rockets, by trading for him, would have his bird rights and be able to pay more than any other team. And by the way, in addition to being a contender, Butler is from Tomball, which is in metropolitan Houston, or very close to it, depending on how you define that. So I would think between the money and status as a contender, they would have a leg up. It's just a matter of whether Tillman Fertitta is willing to pay all of that, because while you'd be sending out as much salary or close to it now as you would be taking in Butler, that's the only way a trade can mathematically work. He would be eligible for a raise, that Supermax contract, next summer, so it would be yet another financial commitment for Tillman Fertitta, but there's no way the Rockets would give up significant assets of any kind, let alone four future first-round picks, if they did not have Tillman Fertitta on board. So I think that's one obvious takeaway. Another takeaway is that I think they feel pretty good about Butler's willingness to re-sign. Obviously, he should, based on the reasons that we've laid out, but in addition to that, before they give up future first-round picks of that magnitude, I would imagine that the Rockets would have someone, i.e. James Harden, Chris Paul, one of their stars that has a good relationship with Butler, try and talk to him behind the scenes to make sure that everyone is on the same page, because you don't give up capital of that significance in the NBA without feeling pretty good about your long-term status with the player. Now, as far as my immediate thoughts, I'm not going to lie. Like a lot of you guys, I was shocked. My eyes nearly popped out of my head when I saw four future first-round picks, because that's quite a contrast to the deal we've hypothetically discussed for a while, which is Eric Gordon, and while the Wolves want P.J. Tucker, the Rockets unwilling to give both Gordon and Tucker, but the Rockets being willing to offer Gordon, and then beyond that, Nene as salary filler, and then some combination of prospects and future first-round picks as the sweetener on top of Eric Gordon. With this deal, while Woj says in the story that discussion on the players involved in the talks remain fluid, I would have a hard time believing that the Rockets would move Eric Gordon plus four future first-round picks for Jimmy Butler unless it was a much larger deal in which they got another significant piece besides Jimmy Butler, and that'd probably have to involve a third or fourth team. At this point, I think a more reasonable explanation is that it would not be Gordon. Instead, Minnesota appears to be prioritizing draft picks, and if that's the case, then the Rockets would keep Gordon. And ultimately, folks, for all the upside we've discussed in terms of adding Jimmy Butler, a two-way player, a regular all-star, just 29 years old, The upside scenarios we outlined were relative to giving up Eric Gordon. If you add Jimmy Butler while keeping Eric Gordon, and you have Chris Paul, James Harden, Jimmy Butler, Clint Capella, and Eric Gordon to close out games, folks, I don't know about you, that is as sick and as loaded a lineup in my estimation, even as the Warriors. Now, maybe if Boogie Cousins is healthy and the seamless integration were to happen, maybe you could still argue for the Warriors, but the point is, the Rockets, they'd be up there. I mean, they would be just as silly in terms of their talent if you add Jimmy Butler to the fold while keeping Eric Gordon. Oh, and while also keeping P.J. Tucker, I presume. So you could mix and match as far as who your fifth wheel is. Gordon if you need more offense, Tucker if you need more defense. And, of course, throughout the game, you could play both of those guys. But the amount of flexibility you'd have against the Golden State Warriors would just be incredible. So I think if you're able to get it done while keeping Gordon, then that might make the Rockets even more willing to part with that level of return. The key date, in my estimation, is October 31st, which is a week from today, because if Eric Gordon isn't going out in this deal, and in my opinion, Eric Gordon and four first-rounders is just far too much, then you have to have salary filler to get somewhere near the $20 million that Jimmy Butler is making this season to make it work under the cap. And the only reasonable way I can see the Rockets doing that would be to include Brandon Knight, who makes about $15 million. Well, Knight is not able to be moved, at least in aggregation, until October 31st. That's the two-month date, 60 days since the Rockets acquired him. The same goes for Marquese Chriss. So in my opinion, next Thursday is a big date, 1 week from today. That's probably why talks are ramping up again, because really the Rockets couldn't offer this package 3 weeks ago, this variation of it, because it would have taken weeks for them to actually logistically be able to move the pieces that it would take to make the trade financially viable without including Eric Gordon, PJ Tucker, one of those types of players. Well, now that we're almost to October 31st, all of a sudden there are other versions that the Rockets can mathematically explore. And in my opinion, that's what's going on right here. It's not so much that the Rockets are committed to going down this path. I think if the Timberwolves wanted an Eric Gordon plus package, they could revisit that. But I think the Rockets sense that, certainly from their end, it's an all-in season. When you re-sign Chris Paul to $40 million a year at age 33, you're about to hear it now in terms of the value of future first-round picks. Look, you're already making a big gamble on the present. We knew that months ago. So I don't really buy that 1-3, the slow start to the year, is pressing the Rockets to do anything they wouldn't have done a week ago. I think it's just a continuation of a mindset that the Rockets have already been in, and now that we're getting closer to October 31st, when Brandon Knight and Marquese Chriss can be aggregated in these deals, well, now the Rockets can explore other possibilities here. And my guess is that the sense from Daryl Morey is that packages that are a blend, i.e. Eric Gordon plus picks and prospects, or in the case of the Miami deal with Josh Richardson, those weren't really enough to get Minnesota to the finish line. Whatever the reason, maybe it's owner Glenn Taylor and head coach Tom Thibodeau not really being in alignment, but deals with significant present capital weren't really enough to tempt Minnesota to do a deal. So now they're essentially going the other direction. We've already been down the road. I'm sure the Rockets have had plenty of discussions involving Eric Gordon as a headliner, and so now they're going to essentially another angle, saying, hey, you know, if the present doesn't really mean that much to you, and if it doesn't to Minnesota, you can't argue with them. It's probably the smarter play for them to focus on draft picks, because Minnesota's not really going to be able to do much in the short term, especially in a Western Conference that has the Warriors and now presumably the Rockets with Jimmy Butler if they were to trade him to Houston. So Minnesota, maybe they should take a long-term perspective, and if they are, then that's how you kind of hit the reboot button on the deal, and that's why, in my opinion, we have these talks that are centered around now as many as four future first-round picks instead of the players. And to be clear, Woj in his report does not say that Eric Gordon would not be moved. This is just my strong belief that Eric Gordon plus four future first-round picks is way too much value when you consider the limitations that you would have moving forward. Because the problem when you move four future first-round picks, the future first-round picks the Rockets keep, you can only trade picks up to 7 years in advance. So presumably the Rockets will be offering 2019, 2021, 2023, and 2025. Well, the Rockets, while they'd be keeping their 2020, 2022, and 2024 picks, they would not be able to trade those draft picks to upgrade their roster. They'd only be able to trade after the fact, after they draft someone, and at that point they'd be considered just a player. But because of the rule that you can't be without future first-round picks for consecutive years moving forward, not only would it be the Rockets giving up four future first-round picks, they'd also be giving up their flexibility to make further upgrades in the future because those other three future first-round picks would be essentially off-limits in terms of, say, if it's the 2018 or 2019 or 2020 deadline and you're trying to make a big move in February, well, the capital that's, you know, the most valued currency in NBA circles is these future first-round picks, and they'd be off-limits. So I just can't see the Rockets being willing to constrain themselves to that degree unless they felt sure that the team they had was so stacked that, barring injury, they're 100% comfortable with where they're at. If you were to give up Gordon and those picks, I think you'd feel pretty good. But especially in the league with the Warriors, I don't know if they'd feel quite secure enough to go all in terms of, you know, moving Gordon for Butler and then giving up all of your flexibility to make other moves going forward. To me, the only way it makes sense to give up that level of flexibility is if you are keeping Gordon and then you have one of these just ridiculous super teams, which, as we mentioned, James Harden, Chris Paul, Jimmy Butler, Clint Capella, Eric Gordon, PJ Tucker, Carmelo Anthony, etc., etc. So, in my opinion, there's a lot of caveats to it. I wouldn't give up Gordon. I probably wouldn't give up Tucker. Future first-round picks, if you give up four of them, I don't care how late they are. And by the way, 2023 and 2025, you don't know what's going to happen. That'd be when Chris Paul is in his late 30s. And who knows, maybe the Rockets bottom out the way the Brooklyn Nets have. And we've all seen how that Brooklyn Boston deal from a few years ago is what set up Boston so beautifully with all these future first-round picks moving forward that Brooklyn traded for Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce and that awful Herschel Walker-esque deal. That said, in certain circumstances, and to me this could be one of them, I don't think mortgaging all of that future draft capital is necessarily as bad of an idea as many others do around the NBA, and that's what I'm going to explain to you in just a few moments. Now, we finished up our first segment discussing just the update from Woj and under what conditions the Rockets might be willing to go as extreme as an offer including four first-round picks for Jimmy Butler. Now, it should be made clear that at this point, the Timberwolves have not shown any inclination to accept it. It doesn't look like a trade is anywhere near fruition, although it really can't be until next Thursday. But ultimately, I think there's a good shot that it could get done because it is a lot of value for Minnesota. And look, if they wait, who's to say there's going to be anything even remotely close to that come the deadline? Because who knows, maybe there's an injury to the Rockets that changes their calculus, or maybe they're less willing to give that kind of capital if they don't have a full season to work Jimmy Butler into the fold. So for a guy that's likely to leave Minnesota next summer anyway, my guess is that if the Rockets are willing to trade all of that, there's a good shot that this deal could actually get done. And I know a lot of you are going to see future first-round picks, especially going out to 2023, 2025, and recoil in horror at giving up that level of flexibility. And I get it. That said, besides the fact that you'd have a super team now, there are some, in my opinion, reasons that are being overlooked for why the Rockets would be willing to make such an offer. For starters, context, the historical parallel to the ill-fated Brooklyn and Boston trade. It wasn't so much that you can't put together an offer to where giving four future first-round picks makes sense. The problem with that Brooklyn-Boston trade was that Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce were in their mid to late 30s. You were looking at really a two-year window tops, and that was with a team in Brooklyn that even after making those acquisitions still was nowhere near a favorite in the Eastern Conference relative to the Miami Heat with LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh all in their primes. In this case, if the Rockets get Jimmy Butler while keeping Eric Gordon, in my opinion, yes, they are every bit as loaded as the Golden State Warriors. You would make them co-favorites in that scenario. And beyond that, Jimmy Butler is just 29 years old. And I know it's popular to say that he's got a lot of mileage. When you look at it, he actually doesn't. I know he's been played a little more than you would like in terms of his minutes with Tom Thibodeau, but he's only had five NBA seasons in which he's played 30-plus minutes. This is not a guy who's in his mid-30s and seems to be breaking down. Really, he hasn't had any sort of major injuries other than the meniscus from last year, which seems to have healed and appears to be a bit of a fluke, freak injury. He's 29 years old. He's in the prime of his career. This is not a 35-year-old Paul Pierce or Kevin Garnett or however old those guys were, to where it's 2 years and then that's it. Now, could you make the argument that when Chris Paul starts to decline, be it when he's 35, 36, whenever his eventual decline is, that even if Jimmy Butler isn't declining, that the Rockets' window might shut before, you know, 4 or 5 years from now? Yes, but if that's the case, as long as Jimmy Butler is still playing well, and again, he's only 29 years old, then conceivably you could trade him 2 or 3 years from now and recoup some of those future first-round picks that you have given up. So really, when you're evaluating this trade from a Butler perspective, you can't really necessarily do it just through the framing of the Rockets as a team long-term. You also have to look at Butler's individual value. And if you feel pretty good that Butler at 31 and 32 years old, and I don't see any reason not to think that he'd be a positive asset at that point, if you think that he would have positive value then even if something happens with Chris Paul to where he doesn't age as gracefully as you might hope, then you would still be able to recoup some of that value back on the back end of this transaction in terms of eventually moving Butler to get some of those future first-round picks returned to you down the line from another team. So between the fact that the Rockets would be a better team than those Brooklyn Nets from a few years ago and the fact that Jimmy Butler is much, much younger than Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce were, I think that's just an ill-fated comparison. This is apples and oranges when you're looking at a guy who's not even 30 years old yet. The problem with that was a combination of the extreme ages of the players, which limited the window for the entire team and made it almost an inevitability that by the time they got out to the 2016 to 2018 range, that yeah, of course they'd be a bad team. There was hardly any way around it. Whereas with this, there are avenues to where the Rockets conceivably could still be competing in 2023, 2024, because even if Chris Paul starts to decline, A, the Rockets think because he's so cerebral, his game will age more gracefully, and B, if you've got James Harden and Jimmy Butler still only 32, 33 years old, you've got Clint Capella just 27, 28, whatever it'll be, it's not like you're in dire straits. Now, your prime window is going to be the next couple of years, but and there's some risk in terms of exactly what injuries these players accrue, but it's not like you can't see a path to still being a really good team in 2023, 2024. So it's not a given that those latter first-round picks would be as bad as it was pretty obvious that they would be when the Nets made that trade for years ago. Now, is it a risk? Yes, no doubt it's a risk, and it's one that I don't think the Rockets would make unless, A, they felt good from in terms of ownership commitment that they'd pay to keep Jimmy Butler together, or that they had a pretty good feeling that Butler would want to stay should such a deal be put together. I think there's a lot of little things that would have to point to Jimmy Butler being happy and being a fit in Houston before they would commit to that extreme. But if those boxes are checked, no, it's not really unfathomable to do that type of deal. Because if there is a market efficiency in the NBA, and we've seen this time and time again, it's late future first-round picks, and related to that, it's also guys that have just been picked or have yet to play NBA games, like we saw with D'Anthony Melton this summer, Jeremy Lamb before the James Harden trade of 2012, and Dante Green way back in 2008, coming off his Monster Summer League when he was then traded at the end of the month for Ron Artest. Generally speaking, teams will gamble on the unknown. And like any trend, you can overdo it. Because the fact is, most of these guys picked in the 20s are not going to work out. This is not the NFL where you trade a late first-round pick and you're giving up a guy who should be a starter. In the NBA, I would say it's sketchy if you pick a guy in the 20s, if he's even going to be a role player, that caliber, a guy who can give you 20 minutes a game on a contender. The landscape is not very pretty. Yet teams will still take the gamble because they want to think that in their system, their scouts know what they're doing, their developmental guys will give them a market efficiency compared to another team, so on and so forth, where Gerald Morey just looks at the data. That's what separates him. He doesn't get biased even to his guys in his system. He looks at the hard data. And the reality is that guys picked in the late 20s, which is where the Rockets, at least for the next couple of years, would certainly be picking if they were to get Jimmy Butler, it's not like you're giving up that much in return. The Rockets' last 4 first-round picks, Sam Dekker in 2015, Clint Capella in 2014, Jeremy Lamb in 2012, Royce White also in 2012. Of those four, Clint Capela is the only even rotation caliber player on a contender right now. Now, Capela, they did hit on. Kudos to the Rockets and Daryl Morey's staff for getting that one exactly right. But the other three guys, Sam Decker, Jeremy Lamb, Royce White, and again, you have to go back a while because the Rockets have traded first-round picks for a long time, in my opinion, for the same reason. Because generally, if you can get a proven commodity now, you're better off giving up a late future first-round pick than anything on your current team, because the odds are that player is not going to be as good as what he's envisioned to be before the pick is made. Or in the case of D'Anthony Melton, again, he had a strong summer league, but the Rockets were able to use him to offload the Ryan Anderson contract and get Brandon Knight and Marquise Chriss, who might end up being instrumental in this trade should the Rockets get Jimmy Butler. The best way I would sum it up is that while this is certainly an extreme example of this philosophy, it's nothing new. We have seen the Rockets go back to the well time and time again from the standpoint of taking advantage of teams that overvalue prospects and late future first-round picks. Effectively, teams want to gamble, and I guess it makes some sense in this era of the Warriors, but they'll pay more on the unknown. If a player hasn't been driven off the lot yet, to use a car analogy, or in the case of an abstract future first-round pick, one that hasn't even been selected, they'll gamble on them being the exception to the rule. The reality is, look, no matter how good you are, because these days every staff is, most, I should say, not every, but most staffs in the NBA are very, very good at what they do, basketball operations. Look, there's just not enough good rotation caliber players in the draft on an annual basis. Most of these guys are going to be bust. So if you look at, you know, 7 years from now, who the likely picks are in 2029, 2021, and maybe 2023 and 2025 in the 20s, would you give up those four guys for Jimmy Butler? At the end, you probably would. The odds are if you pick any random player in the 20s from each of those drafts, my guess is that in hindsight, you'd say, yeah, that would have been a good deal. Because in the NBA, of course, you always trade four quarters for a dollar. It's a game where quality beats quantity. It's all about top-end talent, which Jimmy Butler is, a difference maker on both ends, a regular 20-plus points, 5-plus rebounds, 5-plus assists guy, two-way player, gives you the type of dynamic play on both ends of the court that you need against a loaded Golden State Warriors team. Now, that's not meant to minimize the risk. As I said from the top, I would not do all of this plus Eric Gordon. It's my assumption that if the Rockets go down this path, they would be using, effectively, Brandon Knight and Marquise Chriss potentially as the salary filler rather than anyone from their current rotation. To me, if you give up a current rotation piece plus all that future flexibility, it's not just the fact that, well, what if you bottom out and in 2023 and 2025 you're bad and you've given up your picks. Well, no, the other thing is that you've also significantly constrained your ability to make other future trades if you need role players, because you also can't trade the picks you do keep, 2020, 2022, 2024. You can't trade them ahead of time because you don't have picks the year before or after, and you can't. The NBA doesn't allow you to move future first-round picks in advance in multiple years. And while personally I'm optimistic that if the Rockets were to give up this much, they must have a good feeling about Jimmy Butler's willingness to re-sign and Tillman Fertitta's willingness to pay what it takes, look, things can change. All you got to do is think back to a few years ago, the circumstances that got Dwight Howard to Houston. Look, when the Lakers traded for Dwight Howard in August 2012, they had assurances that he was going to re-sign. And guess what? When things didn't work out on the floor as they imagined, things can change. Nothing is done until the ink is dry and until Jimmy Butler signs that next contract. That is a risk. I'm not saying it's an easy move. I'm not saying it's one in which I just give up all these future first-round picks without a thought. It's not one that I would say comes easy, and I could get why giving up that level of future capital can cause you some concern. I'm not going to argue if you say that it's too much, especially when you consider the age of Chris Paul, a little bit of a sluggish start to the year, all the other things. Is it worth all of that? I'm not going to say that you're wrong. What I will say is that there is a case where it could work out, so you can understand what they're thinking. If this report from Woj, and since he's the godfather of basketball journalism, I have no reason to doubt it. If this report is accurate, I can understand where they're coming from. It's not to say they're 100% right, but I can understand where they're coming from. Because if you keep Eric Gordon, this team should be absolutely stacked. It should be sick. It should be ridiculous. And if you have that level of team, and you're giving up picks that are likely, at least for the foreseeable future, to be in the 20s, and you feel so good about your depth and your health that you don't think you're going to need to make future major deals at the deadline, which again would be significantly more difficult since you don't really have a future first-round pick in consecutive years until 2026 and 2027 in this hypothetical, and you can't even trade those picks right now. There is risk to it. I'm not trying to minimize it. I think we should all think about it and be aware of these factors going in. But at the same time, if you have a team that's that good, and then you consider what the average pick in, say, the mid-20s in the NBA draft typically is, and if you can get Jimmy Butler, someone not even 30 years old, of that caliber, while giving up four players, they're typically, say, average 25th picks in the NBA draft, and add Jimmy Butler to the fold without giving up any of your current rotation pieces, yeah, it's something that, while it's a very unusual trade, it's a very odd proposal. At the same time, number one, it's Daryl Morey. You should be used to odd proposals by now. He's always thinking outside of the box. But secondly, while, again, I get there's a lot of sticker shock to it, my eyes nearly popped out of my head as well, but when you think about it, it's not really as crazy as it sounds at first glance, and so it wouldn't shock me that the Rockets went down this path. That said, there's also not a guarantee that the Wolves will take it. Again, the Wolves are so unpredictable. We don't know what they're thinking. There's still some infighting, it appears, between the owner and the coach. So all of this, stay tuned. But my guess is that, be it with the Rockets or someone else, next Thursday is going to be an inflection point, because whether the Wolves take this deal or whether they leverage it to get more from Miami or somewhere else, October 31st, that's the date that Brandon Knight and Marquise Chris can be aggregated, and it's my opinion that that's going to be a key date in this, whether the Rockets get Jimmy Butler or he goes elsewhere. October 31st, when those guys can be traded, I think that's when we'll see action Butler to here or Butler discussions heating up somewhere else, because somehow the Timberwolves leverage these talks into a better deal that they like elsewhere. Or maybe they just don't want to trade him to another team in the Western Conference. Who knows what Tom Thibodeau and Glenn Taylor are thinking. But the bottom line is, the Rockets are all in, and it's not an overreaction to starting 1-3 or anything else going on right now. I think it's just the reality that, look, you sign Chris Paul to $40 million a year starting at age 33. You're not worried about 5, 6, 7 years from now. Your window is now. The Rockets are trying to maximize that window, and while this trade offer is certainly a bit unconventional, when you think about it, it's really not all that crazy. Now, to close out the podcast, jumping back into the here and now, one reason why the Rockets are thinking about reinforcements, and not just on a scale as large as Jimmy Butler, is because, at least for the next two games, they're going to be very shorthanded. We got updates today. James Harden, a grade 1+ strain of the hamstring, same left hamstring that he hurt last January, I believe, or December 31st, missed time in January. I would note that even though this bridges two seasons, the fact is it's been in less than a calendar year, and we're talking about the same hamstring and an MVP who, at 29 years old, is not getting old, but does have some mileage. I do think the Rockets are going to have to be careful with this one, and I mentioned yesterday that the Rockets would definitely hold him out Friday. Well, in addition to holding out Friday, they're also going to hold him out of next Tuesday's games, to some degree for the same reason they're holding him out Friday. There's so few games in the next week. After Friday night's game, Tuesday's only one between this Friday and next Friday, so essentially they can buy time without missing that much more. They do get Chris Paul back from the suspension, so hopefully they don't fall into a 1-4 or 1-5 start in the interim. Hopefully Chris Paul comes back chomping at the bit and just as effective as he was in LA when he was clearly the best player on the floor prior to his suspension, 28-10-7, shooting better than 50% from the field. But Harden with a left hamstring strain, James Ennis with a right hamstring strain, that's a grade 2. Folks, when James Harden missed all that time in January, 2.5 weeks, say all that time, but 2.5 weeks was about the quickest I've ever seen an NBA player with a grade 2 hamstring injury return. That's what Chris Paul suffered in the playoffs that ended his season prematurely and the Rockets' championship bid. And next Friday, which is when the 5-game road trip begins, would not even be 2 weeks from when Ennis suffered the injury, which was in the fourth quarter Sunday night against the LA Clippers. So while both players will be reevaluated before the road trip, I think there's a good chance that Harden could be ready. Getting a little over a week off for a grade 1 plus is reasonable. For a grade 2, I think you're going to need more than, say, 12 days. So my guess is that Harden, assuming all goes well, good shot that he gets cleared for the road trip. Ennis maybe midway through the road trip, but I doubt he's ready to go from the outset of that one. And then beyond that, the Rockets also announced today that Nene had a bit of a setback, it appears, at least according to Kelly Eco of The Athletic, in his return from a calf injury. He'll be reevaluated again in 2 weeks. Now, I don't think the Rockets were counting on major minutes from a 36-year-old Nene, but when you factor in that Marquise Chris is also out with a left hamstring, with a left ankle sprain, excuse me, and then all the regular issues that we've had throughout the Rockets' rotation. Right now, the team is just running low on bodies, so even if Nene at 36 years old wasn't intended to play a key role at some point, you need bodies that aren't just completely unseasoned the way Gary Clark and Isaiah Hartenstein are. And so the Nene injury, while in a vacuum, he's not that important, it is significant. And of course, if the Rockets could strike a Jimmy Butler deal in the here and now, that would certainly help. But that's not the only place that they could turn. There are guys out there. Kelly Eco of The Athletic floated the names Nick Young and Anthony Morrow, both swingmen that are available, basically free agents, the same way that Gerald Green was this time a year ago. Both just sitting by their phones waiting for a call. The Rockets have had a few links to Nick Young over the past 2 years. He will come in ready to shoot, and that's something that that Mike D'Antoni always wants. So this thing could come together quickly. Now, do the Rockets want to waste a roster spot? I don't know. There's also the possibility you could move on from Michael Carter-Williams if you really don't think he's working out. Now, it's four games, so I don't know if they'd pull the plug that quickly on this experiment, but it wouldn't be unprecedented if they don't feel good about it. I mean, keep in mind last year when they brought in Isaiah Cannon and then turned around a few days later and released him. The Rockets are not, especially when you're looking at guys that aren't really a key part of your future anyway and are going through this wave of injuries where you just need bodies, I do think they'll be open-minded to giving guys a call, especially with now Harden and Ennis not available for at least the next two games. And keep in mind, when the Rockets got Gerald Green last year off the street, his workout, his signing, and his first game were all the same day. It was all that Thursday right after Christmas when the Rockets were in Boston. It all happened like that within 12 hours, so it can happen fast. So I certainly don't think the Rockets are going to even put 1% of the weight of their Jimmy Butler trade calculus, what they would give up in terms of serving as a temporary Band-Aid, because when you're giving up that level of capital, that's a very long-term organizational decision on a number of levels. Ownership, keeping Jimmy Butler, all those types of things, philosophy, you have to have a linear agreement, all the things that we've discussed over the last 30 minutes or so. But in the short term, if the Rockets decide they need bodies, it would not surprise me if they went out and got one of those guys. Now, some of it may depend on exactly what the prognosis is for Harden and Ennis. Again, while they're saying they'll be reevaluated in a week, that's no guarantee they're going to be cleared. And in the case of Ennis, as I stated with the Gray 2, I'm wary that he'll actually be ready in a week or anything that close to that. And I do think, as I explained in last night's postgame show, there's a sense of urgency. Look, if you can steal a game here and start 2-4 or 3-3 instead of 1-5, then that's a big deal for a Rockets team that knows they need every advantage to take down the Warriors. I mean, if you're willing to give up all of this to trade for Jimmy Butler to be all in, then yeah, a game or two at the end of the year could be the difference between home court advantage or not, especially in a Western Conference that's as good as it is right now. So I have no news that anything is imminent. I'm not trying to break that anything is happening. And again, part of it comes down to information that we don't have yet. Exactly what is the prognosis for James Harden and James Ennis? When do they think they're getting those guys back? If they're just missing two games, maybe you don't do anything drastic, especially because there are contracts and or roster spots involved there. But if there's a chance it could be longer than that, all I'm going to say is that it would not surprise me if they make a move, because even if it's tomorrow, it could happen very quickly in terms of signing a guy, putting him in uniform, and as far as playing 15 or 20 minutes in Mike D'Antoni's system, folks, it's not rocket science, especially when you're Nick Young or Anthony Morrow, someone like that. You're spacing the floor, you're going to get a lot of open threes, take them, hopefully you make them, and at least at a better rate than Eric Gordon did last night, so a little bit better about that 0 of 11 start. But anyway, we'll see what happens. We'll talk about that more if and when something happens. Just something to keep your eyes peeled for, because as these injuries mount, and the fact is there are some proven commodities on the shelf right now and available, I do think that the Rockets would have to keep an open mind, especially when you consider the extended minutes they had to give last night. Eric Gordon, PJ Tucker, Carmelo Anthony, all critical role players, all playing about 39 minutes. Really, the Rockets having a seven-man rotation, I'd call it kind of seven and two halves. You had very limited spot minutes from Gary Clark and Isaiah Hartenstein. But I think the Rockets know that's not really a sustainable model for the long term. And if it's more than a couple of games without James Harden and James Ennis, or even if it's just a couple of games, that might be enough that the season that's all about maximizing the margins, the Rockets might think about upgrading their supporting cast with a temporary Band-Aid. I don't know who that is. I don't know if it happens tomorrow. I would just say stay tuned, because if the Rockets are willing to do some of the things that have been rumored lately, it's pretty clear they're valuing the here and now. Every game matters, and if you want to maximize your chances, you may need, at least for the next week or so, some outside reinforcements beyond just what you currently have on the roster. Anyway, until we get news on one of those fronts, or until tomorrow night's game, I would normally say we'll have a post-game recap tomorrow, but who knows? With the Rockets, news can strike at any time. Whatever that does happen, though, of course, we'll have you covered right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast discussion of Houston Rockets basketball. For today, this will do it, though. If you want more content before our next episode, the best place to get it is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben DuBose. The show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Beyond that, we've got a website, lockedonrockets.com, email address, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. Facebook account, facebook.com/LockedOnRockets. Always, you can access our content, ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, advertising inquiries, pretty much whatever we can do to make this a better podcast for you, a diehard Rockets fan, or even you, the human being. I would absolutely love to hear from you. Also, if you haven't subscribed to us already, please do. That's how we look attractive to advertisers and keep the business model working here at Locked On Rockets, the most regular podcast covering the Houston Rockets. And if you'd also be kind enough to leave us a 5-star review, that's another way that we can look attractive to those potential clients. Also, wherever you listen to us and subscribe, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone, TuneIn, the odds are you can find this because we're part of a great network of shows at the Locked On Podcast Network, local experts across the NBA and also the NFL, Major League Baseball, college sports here in Houston. It also includes the Houston Texans, who are playing tonight, Thursday Night Football, and the Texas A&M Aggies, who have a big game coming up. So if you want to listen to one of those shows, if you want some post-game coverage of Texans-Dolphins Thursday night, check out Locked On Texans, hosted by my friends Robert Land and Brian Patterson. That's our sister show on this Locked On Podcast Network, offering daily insight into Houston Texans football. And then this weekend, tune into Locked On Aggies if you're a fan of Texas A&M, because Taylor Travis will have you covered when the Aggies play Mississippi State in a big game on Saturday night. Anyway, for today, this will do it. We'll see what tomorrow holds as far as any potential roster moves, updates on the Jimmy Butler front, temporary band-aids, in terms of more depth of shooters, or if it's a quiet day and we just see what happens with the game tomorrow night when the Rockets have their fifth game of the year at home against the LA Clippers at Tudor Center. Whatever happens, though, we'll be back very soon right here at Locked On Rockets to break it all down, because this is your place for daily discussion of Houston Rockets basketball. Thanks again for listening. Enjoy your Thursday and come back soon.